I don't mean to start a debate here, but we're about to start our next episode. I think it's going to be a really good episode.
I think it's going to be a great episode.
I think it's going to be a terrific episode.
Well, no, I think it's going to be pretty good.
Oh, no, I retract that. I think it's going to stink.
Oh.
I've rethought my position. I've reanalyzed the information, and this will stink.
Well, I think once we cut down the intro, it'll be pretty good.
This may appear to be only monkey business, but in reality, it's very serious, ladies.
Zero Issues Comic Podcast. Zero Issues Comic Podcast.
Excelsior!
Welcome to Zero Issues Comic Podcast. I am one third of your host, Merc.
I am 33.333333%, which is another way of saying third. A really long way, and an annoying way, of your host, I'm Bri.
And I'm pi percent. God, wait, pi's 3.141516. Uh-oh.
So who's that remainder bit?
It's the listeners.
Oh!
You're the fifth member of the show. Who's the fourth member? Shut up. Have some pie.
We give them a very small percentage, but, that's life.
I'm the percentage that's bad at math, apparently.
And that small percentage does not have voting rights.
Oh, man.
But I vote that we go to the news.
I second that. Wait, you don't second a vote.
Current Zero News Flash.
It's too late. We're in the news.
Here we are.
I vote for a better world. It's not going to work, but I'm going to vote for it.
I vote The Rock, and I rock the vote. I keep voting for The Rock. He's not running for anything, but he gets my vote every time.
That's true. But I mean, you can't go wrong. He's never led us astray. Never.
Well, except when he went all corporate.
Anyways,
please, God, it doesn't matter.
maybe I'll start. This is a bit of a... I'll start on a downer so we don't end on a downer.
Yeah.
This is the ongoing saga of artist Joe Bennett. He was the artist on Immortal Hulk with Al Ewing doing the writing. And there was some stuff inserted into the drawings that were taken in a way that, like, that could be an anti-Semitic sort of thing. And then there's a few things in his past that has come up, like, just comments and that were deleted immediately and things like that. And since then, Marvel has completely cut ties with him. He is gone, and he was set to do a one-shot called Timeless, which is coming out around Christmas. And it's, like, some sort of, like, one-shot prelude to some sort of event with Kang, I think. He's been replaced by Greg Land.
Oh.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
I thought that was a
good
joke
job,
at first.
No, no. But this stems from, there's been some, like, political cartoons, I guess, that Joe Bennett has done. He is Brazilian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Al Ewing, I don't know if he reposted it or just, like, posted a comment on it and kind of went public with it, calling him out on his anti-Semitic images. Basically, this is what he said. An armored swordsman, which I assume represents Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro is the Brazilian president and who is, like, a part of the far right group.
Very far right, yes.
Yeah, I assume represents Bolsonaro, given Joe's commentary, slaughtering tiny, scurrying people with buck teeth and ears of rats and big noses. One of them is cosplaying Dracula. I'm assuming these are political enemies of some kind, but even if not, the tropes are apparent. Human beings as vermin being exterminated, even if it's no longer up, that it was drawn, the idea that it was drawn in the first place, signed, and so proudly displayed by Joe, speaks volumes. So, yeesh.
Huh. Yes, indeed.
And I've seen some like news thing, like CBR and Newsarama and stuff posting this. And people commented like, oh, it's just people reacting to one image. And like, obviously you did not read the article. Like, this is an ongoing thing. It's not cancel culture. It's called consequences to your actions.
And it's also like reacting to one image. I'm like, yes, images actually have meaning, specifically if it's, you know, literally trying to describe what could be taken as like kind of a fascism or like genocide against an entire group of people. Yeah, it's not just a picture. It has a message, and it's pretty clear.
It just goes to show you that that, you know, we think of people with talent as normally good and good people, but sometimes bad people are also very talented.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, big time. It's, you know, that's just one of those lines where it's. I don't know. I have a hard time with people trying to like run defense for something that's so extreme like that. I mean, like, I get that, like, everyone can have their own opinions, but if your opinion is like literally about slaughtering people that you consider your political enemies, I would hope that would be the line we all draw.
Anyway. Moving on?
Moving on.
Marvel or Disney or whoever has announced 4 new film dates, like film premiere dates in 2024.
And they're all the same date.
Well, they're February 16th, May 3rd, July 26th, and November 8th in 2024.
That's pretty close in 1 year. That's a lot.
Well, you know, they got a lot of things going on, and they've pushed back a lot of movies, so they're like, look, 2024, everything should be fine, right, guys? Please?
Yeah. 4 movies in 2024. There are going to be 4 solo movies for the Fantastic Four.
I was about to say that.
Or it's Machine Man Part 1, Machine Man Part 2, 3, and 4.
There's a lot of complicated parts in Machine Man.
Yep.
Gears. And also useful parts.
Many useful parts. You know, the machine can't be stopped, and I'm very excited.
That's right. It must feed. It must feed on blood.
Yeah.
It must be fed.
I need blood.
Sort of on that note, not exactly. Another Marvel announcement for media property. But now we're going to video games, baby. So Yay. Insomniac and Sony have announced the, you know, Marvel's Spider-Man 2, like the, you know, the game that came out a couple years ago for PS4. So they, and a Miles Morales spinoff came out more recently in the last year or so. Haven't had a chance to play that yet. But now the full-on sequel is coming for 2023. Cool. I'm glad I have some time to wait for that, because I don't...
I'm glad I have some time to save up for a PS5, because it's not going to be on a PS4.
No, Chadley, no.
If I save a dollar every single day, then I might have enough money by the time it comes out.
To pay the tax on it.
And you know, for the price of a cup of coffee a day, you can buy a PS5.
So they had a trailer that came out very recently in the last week, which shows Peter and Miles fighting together, fighting some crooks, which is cool. And then the very end, there's a bit of a voiceover with kind of a Russian voice talking. Basically, he's you know, somebody wants a challenge or something like that. So that's probably Kraven.
Yeah.
And then you have the appearance at the end where they're looking into the shadows and Venom's face appears. So Venom will be in this. And the part that got me very excited is that Venom's voice was provided by Tony Todd.
Really?
So that's pretty good.
I didn't realize that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Apparently, that's what I read, is that Tony Todd is playing Venom. So sign me the hell up on that one. That's great.
Cool. If you look into a mirror and say Venom 3 times.
Yeah, sure. Like, just popped into a pawn shop. You know, briefly, and they had the Candyman on DVD for like $1. She's like, I'll buy that, and I had it right behind me. I was gonna pull it out, but it's not here anymore. She took it away.
What if we say DVD 3 times?
DVD, DVD, DVD.
Porky Pig?
Insomniac, same developer, also revealed another Marvel game. A bit of a surprise. So there was a short teaser in a bar where you have a gentleman in the kind of like flannel and a cowboy hat sitting at like a dive bar. Some like bigger guy kind of approaches from behind him. You see his like fist on the bar, and 3 claws come out, and it's Wolverine. So Insomniac is doing a Wolverine game too, and I imagine also PlayStation exclusive.
Yeah, probably.
Which is interesting because, like, you know, obviously Spider-Man is in a specific Sony situation. So I'm, you know, I there's a lot of you can speculate a lot of things. So I'm like, well, why would they necessarily do a Wolverine game as a PlayStation exclusive? But they have so many
because nobody wants to play the Silver Sable game.
yeah, but I mean, considering the Sony and Marvel deal seems to be continuing. You know, there might be a little concessions back and forth. We're like, okay, well, we're going to relinquish some of Spider-Man to Marvel more and more, those rights for movies and stuff, but we're going to need something in return. And maybe they have sort of maybe licensing video games and stuff like that is a pretty, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope that Wolverine game is just like a bar fight. Then he leaves a bar, goes to another bar and starts another bar fight. And just bar hops where he just.
Yeah.
Kills everybody in every bar. And then you're like, I'm a hero. Schnickety schnickety.
Yeah, it's just Double Dragon, but he's got claws.
Yeah, exactly.
Wolverine's doing a hurricane kick.
Do the one where they bring Colossus to the bar to get beat up by Juggernaut. And
you don't
have to play, though. You just play as Wolverine drinking beer, watching it happen, and that's the game.
And yeah, you have to, like, how many beer can you drink while Colossus gets his ass?
It's just a drinking game, yeah. You and Kurt having a drinking game. That's the online play.
It's reverse Tapper, where instead of throwing the drinks down the bar to the customers, you are Wolverine and you're gobbling up all the drinks before the other customers can get them.
You gotta catch them.
Love it.
Oh my god, yeah. Two-player Tapper. That sounds... Huh, am I a genius?
Bub, 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 bub. I feel the way I feel, bub.
And finally, the controversial Spider-Man story Sins Past, in which Norman Osborn and Gwen Stacy had babies, had twin babies.
Good idea.
Is no longer canon.
Better idea. Better idea.
Yeah. Here's a different idea. Here's some reverse improv where they're saying no. Yeah. As of Amazing Spider-Man number 73, apparently that whole thing was made up, and they tricked everybody. They tricked Norman, and they tricked MJ, and they that sneaky Mysterio, and
with Harry, I guess Harry was the mastermind, just to make everyone think that happened for one assumes a reason
as a hilarious joke.
Surprise!
I'm not reading Spider-Man right now, but I'm like, I'm gonna look online and see what I can see with just that stuff. It seems like a very, very stupid retcon, but I'm actually okay with it because it's retconning a very, very stupid story, which deserves it. So, that's fine. As long as we never talk about it again, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Let's never talk about it again.
Welcome to the warm-up!
Oh, wow. So, I have no memory of what just happened, but here we are in the warm-up, so that's fine.
Something about Wolverine?
Yeah, Wolverine's cool. So for the warm-up today, people love that Sinister Six. They love all six of them, so sinister. So I thought, for a warm-up, what we could do, we're going to basically rank Sinister Six teams. Not individual members, the full team. We're going to talk about, like, who's in the team, why they got together, and we're just going to give them a ranking, each one of us, between 1 and 6, based on their sinisterness.
All right.
Whatever that means. Whatever that means. 1 being the least sinister, 6 being the most sinister. That's how you rank sinisterness. It's that is science. That part is science. So we're going to go first with the original Sinister Six. So they're the ones I think appeared in, I think it was Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 1, I think, was the issue that first showed up in back in the 60s. So this is Dr. Octopus has been beaten by Spider-Man a couple of times. All of his, like, rogues gallery have just been constantly beaten by Spider-Man. They're really mad. They're not happy about this. They want revenge. They just flat out want to team up to kill Spider-Man because they've had it with this kid. So you have Dr. Octopus, you have Electro, Kraven the Hunter, Mysterio, Sandman, and the Vulture. And of course, these are all the original versions because this was in the mid-60s, probably. So they teamed up basically just to, you know, to kill Spider-Man. Part of this plan involved them kidnapping Aunt May and Betty Brant, holding them hostage in order to force Spider-Man to confront them. Very strange. They didn't know who Peter Parker is.
Yeah, I was like, did they know?
They specifically kidnapped his elderly aunt and his then-girlfriend, weirdly enough. I don't know how that happened.
Well, New York is a small town.
Yeah, yeah, hijinks, baby. So what they did, they all wanted to kill him. None of them would say, like, well, I'll let you kill him. Like, no, they all wanted the right to kill him, so they decided their best plan was to fight him one by one, which didn't work, and Spider-Man made fun of them for doing it at the end. So this is the original Sinister Six. Everything starts somewhere. We got to give these bad boys a ranking between 1 and 6, and we all have to pick a number on this one.
I would give them a 4. Because, like, that's pretty sinister, but,
yeah.
You know, the execution sort of falls flat. There's some goofiness to it. I mean, it's the 60s, but you know, a solid showing, but not the best. They could do better. They could be more sinister.
I'm inclined. That was the first number that came to mind, too, because the plan is pretty sinister, but, you know, they weren't quite there. I mean, this is their first time, you know, they tried out. It's a decent showing. They're going to learn from their mistakes, I think.
Almost word for word what I was gonna say, like 4 exactly, because that is a solid lineup. That is the classic. They're all badasses. Yep. They're all great characters, but yeah, just like always, let's take one at a time because that worked previously. Go ahead. Nope. Bad.
Okay, so we all gave them a 4. So that's, I mean, obviously that's 4. They get a 4.
Don't need no more. That's ungrammatical.
Next, we have The Return of the Sinister Six from Amazing Spider-Man 334 to 339 during, I think, like the Eric Larson and...
Really?
David Michelinie period. Yeah, apparently, according to the internet. Believe it or not, yeah. So Dr. Octopus once again recruits his team. Kraven, it's mostly the same, actually, but Kraven died, obviously, in the 80s, so he got replaced by the Hobgoblin, but it's, like, specifically... like the demonic kind of possessed.
Demo goblin, yeah.
Right.
Sort of, yeah. It's still, I think it's Macandale at this point, but he sort of was like possessed by a demon, which eventually split off to become Demo Goblin, if I remember correctly. So many goblins.
Yeah, right.
So this time he had a plan to take over the world. So he's aiming a little bigger here. So Doc Ock was sort of also tricking them a little bit, like making them his aiding and abetting him, sort of. He had an overall plan. He was going to release a chemical into the atmosphere that would cause pain in anyone who attempted to use cocaine.
What?
Yeah, and then he would sell his cure for this chemical to the rich and powerful.
Who love cocaine.
Yeah, and so the Sandman, Sandman was blackmailed into joining because at this point he was sort of reformed, and then he ultimately switched sides to help Spider-Man defeat the Sinister Six. So what happened is he did release the chemical and it was eating away at the ozone layer, and apparently Spider-Man had to release the cure into the atmosphere to offset it. So I guess that's how this plot was foiled.
He just shot webs into the ozone and sealed it up.
Yeah.
Science.
Like you do.
Oh, absolutely. So that's the Return of the Sinister Six.
I would give this one a 2. This sounds like a dud Sinister Six. Like,
I think it's
I like it when the Sinister Six plan is kill Spider-Man, because that's what it should be. It's a bunch of guys with grievances against Spider-Man. They shouldn't be concentrating on ruling the world or robbing a bank or something. Yeah. So between that and the, like, what specifically Doc Ock's plan was, I'm giving him a 2.
I'm going to go the other way, and I'm going to say it's a 5, because Doc had another plan as opposed to just the one main plan of getting them together and get Spider-Man. That's even more sinister.
Ooh.
Yeah. It is pretty sinister.
I forgot that we're ranking the amounts of sinisterness. I totally forgot about the conceit of this thing.
I think also part of a sinister is, I mean, you know what I mean? It has to be like a very sinister plan, but you also have to be competent enough.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, there's levels, there's layers to sinisterness.
Was Kraven left-handed? And is Hobgoblin left-handed? Because if one of them is left-handed more, then I'll give an extra point. Because as we all know, sinister means left-handed.
I'm going to assume at least one of the Sinister Six is left-handed. Just, I think it's a safe bet. One of them at least is. I'm giving them a 4. I'm giving this a 4 as well. I think that it's more ambitious, But the fact that one of your members of your team turned against you and teamed up with the person you're fighting is that's pretty rough, buddy. You didn't do a very good job. So I'm giving him a 4. I don't know. Kyle, are you sticking with 2?
Yeah, you know what? I am going to stick with 2.
That's fair.
I already locked it in.
Sinister 7. We have, they are formed by the Hobgoblin. So Kane had killed Dr. Octopus at this point in the lovely Clone Saga that we all love.
It's Hobgoblin and 7 Aunt Mays.
Yes, 7 Aunt Mays. Sinister
it's
7.
It's
kind of
7.
Cheating here. This is kind of cheating a bit, Sinister 7, I guess. But anyway, so you have the Hobgoblin, the Beetle, Electro, Mysterio, Scorpion. Scorpion, this is the first time the Scorpion showed up, weirdly enough.
Mm-hmm.
The Shocker, and Vulture. So basically, they're just trying to straight up get revenge on Kane for killing Dr. Octopus, who it seems like is a bad boss. I feel like, why do they care that much? He's really kind of been a bad leader. But anyway, so they try to fight Kane. Apparently, they almost kill him, but Spider-Man ends up saving him at the last minute. And then the two of them team up to beat up the Sinister Seven. I want to give them a 2, frankly, in this case, because, I mean, like, revenge is great, but it's not even revenge against Spider-Man. It's revenge against Kane, and Kane's fine.
But that's the impetus. That's the, they have a new cause. And if they almost killed him and only didn't kill him because Spider-Man came in and saved, that's pretty sinister.
You know what? 3, you've convinced me.
I'm going to go with a 4 on this one.
All right.
I'm going to go with a 3.
Okay. So we have a few other ones. There's, you know, and there's a Sinister 12 at one point. I'm not doing it because we don't have time to list 12 characters. A Sinister 12. That's cheating. And also, if you're going to do more than 6 or 7, you need that alliteration. 16. Sinister 16.
Sinister 16, yeah.
Yeah, with Molly Ringwald.
You're already doing 12. Just add 4 more. Sinister 12, stricken from the record. Sandman's Sinister 6. So this is during the era with where John Byrne was, I think, writing and drawing Spider-Man when they relaunched everything. Bad times. So Sandman, I guess he'd been turned back into a villain by the Wizard somehow. He had the second Mysterio. I don't remember the second Mysterio's name.
Yeah.
First one's dead.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, instead of the glow, like the round fishbowl head, he's got a square terrarium head.
Yes. Yes.
And there's a turtle in there.
And there's a turtle that just keeps biting him. That's why
he's got
angry,
like a full scuba gear. He's got full scuba gear inside so he can breathe inside the aquarium.
Ow! Ow! Turtle biting.
Okay, we have Electro, the second Kraven the Hunter, which is that Alyosha Kraven? One of his kids.
Is that the daughter?
No, it's like
he's got a bunch of kids.
Yeah. He's got too many kids.
He's a MILF hunter.
The Vulture again, and instead of Dr. Octopus, we have... We got Venom. Also, because Dr. Octopus isn't there, so they added Venom for the first time. So basically, the Sandman was put them all together to get revenge on Dr. Octopus for, I guess he turned Sandman into glass during the Return of the Sinister Six story when he like turned against him. I think Electro blasted him and he turned to glass. Which is kind of weird because that feels like that was a while ago now, and also like you were a good guy then and you're a bad guy now. I don't know what's going on. So they were defeated, and then Venom decided he was going to attack all of the members of the group and damn near killed Sandman and Electro and Kraven before they, you know, that they it went off the rails so badly that one of their members almost killed half the team.
But then Vulture had to leave because he had to take his heart pills because he's 104.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't feel good.
He's got to go back to Springfield to run the nuclear power plant. So
nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Really.
I am going to give, frankly, I'm giving this team a 1 because it seems like they accomplished nothing.
Yeah, was Spider-Man even there? Was he just like eating a sandwich or what?
I guess. Venom,
sitting
Venom
on the edge
the
of the building,
was...
eating and just watching. This is
like, people love it when I do this.
So I'm giving him a 1. I think that it was an absolute failure. Sandman leading this in... Come on, you're not up for this, buddy.
I'd go with a 2, but yeah, it's not getting better than that. Yep.
I'm going to give it a 2 just because Venom turned and almost killed several members, so that's pretty sinister.
They've come back a lot more in the meantime, but a few of note, there was one during Civil War. This one is Dr. Octopus, the Grim Reaper, the Lizard, Shocker, Trapster and the Vulture. I feel like we almost want to strike this one from the record because they did form during Civil War, during the chaos of Civil War. Apparently, they were stopped by Captain America and the Secret Avengers off panel and were found bound and subdued by S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay, so they get a zero.
They get a zero.
Yeah. This is Doc Ock. This is Doc Ock. Zero. This is immediately stricken. And the last one I'm going to name here, there's a lot of other little ones. We don't have time for all of them. A lot of them are pretty forgettable, but we're going to go with the Superior era Sinister Six, which were in Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Boomerang, Overdrive, The Shocker, Speed Demon, Living Brain, and the Beetle, which is like the female Beetle, who I believe is the daughter of Tombstone. And I think one or two of those members might have swapped a little bit just based on when they first joined up. I think the Living Brain was gone, and then they were still, even though there was five of them, they were still calling themselves Sinister yes. Six. So what they were doing then is they were attacking Horizon Labs, which I was to do with that whole era. It was like a think tank kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Superior Spider-Man defeated them. And then disabled their equipment, and he was about to kill Boomerang. But I guess Peter Parker's consciousness was still in his mind and was stopping him from doing that. They were arrested. So they sort of, eventually they broke out. They just sort of became like a regular plague on the underworld. They were going after the Owl. They were just kind of like trying to kind of be taken seriously and gobble up more of the underworld power as kind of a long-term thing. So basically they ended up breaking up because... even though they were a team together, Boomerang, I think, just screwed everybody over, and they all hated him. So.
Sounds pretty sinister, but yeah, that's a one.
Yeah.
That's a one.
That's a one. Maybe
But it's a
two.
Fun book. Certainly yeah. a fun book, but not very sinister.
I'm going to give him a two. I'll give him a two because it felt like they at least had ambitions beyond just one attack on Spider-Man or one act of revenge. But... they just weren't. You want to root for them. You want to root for them, but
we. You know, I don't.
If you want to root for them, they're not sinister. There we go.
Yeah.
So who wins?
They opened their strongest. Apparently, the winner from what I've seen here is the original team because we all voted four, which means divided by three, they get a 4 out of 6, which is a passing grade. The Return of the Sinister Six is just slightly behind them. But I just think they couldn't recapture that energy. Everyone else, just a big stink fest. They weren't that sinister.
I mean, the Sinister Six is sort of like Doomsday in that the more you use it, the less effective it is. The first time it was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then it was like, oh, no, he's just going to kick all their butts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody's going to get turned to glass.
And it's going to be Vulture.
Yeah.
Oh, he's mid-flying and he just crashes and breaks a million pieces.
Like that one gremlin.
Like your f***.
Welcome to the main topic. We have visited this topic before, but it was so much fun. We thought we'd dip back into that well again.
It's easy to do.
It is. Age-old comic debates.
Yes.
And there's plenty of them, of course. From all different angles. I think what we did before, there was stuff like just basics of like Marvel versus DC or Betty or Veronica or
Star Wars versus Star Trek.
Star Wars versus Star Trek, yeah. And so now we've each chosen a few more. And who wants to go first on this?
First one I've got is Superhuman Registration, yay or nay?
Oh. Ooh. And if you're unfamiliar, this was, it's come up a couple of times, but it's basically that the government needs to have you register as whatever powers you have.
Yeah, if you're a vigilante or if you have powers.
Yeah, yeah. So you aren't just a loose cannon.
And there's also like, that can compare to mutant registration where it's something you're born with and now you have to register with the government for it. And
Yeah.
Right.
So what do you think?
This is this is a tricky one, right?
It
what
is.
Do you think, fascists?
I initially was like, yeah, I'm kind of for it in a certain way. It's kind of like having a driver's license, but then at the same time, I'm for it but I'm also for people fighting it and not doing it. So it depends on how it's used.
I think this is always a good concept. Yeah. Stories that use it aren't always that great, necessarily.
They can be, but they're not always, yeah.
Sometimes the movie is actually quite good, but the comic is not very good, actually. Mm. But what are you going to do?
Sometimes Cap gets shot with a time bullet.
I mean, that part's kind of neat. Yeah, I do agree. I mean, like, I always kind of have a similar kind of take on it, I think, where much like, say, like, guns, much like, say, like, a vehicle or something, it's like, yeah, you gotta, like, register, you gotta have a license for that stuff. I agree with that, because otherwise, you know, you need to make sure people are able to take care of and manage that stuff. It's a little trickier when it's literally just your own body does stuff that may or may not be, and generally speaking, it was either an accident or you know, just a circumstance of birth. So I see both sides of it. I think maybe if you are active, you know what I mean? If you're like, if you have powers, but you're not really going to be functioning as a vigilante or something like that necessarily, you know, I don't think you should have to register your body.
And then it's also on the other
end. I love that. That slow jam song. Sorry.
Just do your body.
Just do your body, girl.
Yeah.
Shut up, Kyle.
Personally speaking, I think, like, if somebody is out there saving lives and stuff, and, you know, I feel like there should be some lenience for those who are using it to do good and also deserve some privacy in their lives, but they also need to be able to deal with the ones who maybe are causing a lot of problems.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I'm leaning more against, I suppose, but not entirely. I think that there's situations where, like, treating everybody like a criminal just because they have powers and might be using them to try to help people, especially in a world with superheroes for, like, decades, that seems a little heavy-handed, in my opinion.
I think if they're going to do it, they should offer, you know, supports for people with these things, because it's not... you know, maybe you need some sort of health coverage if you're going to be doing this. Maybe you need some sort of, like, psychological support if you're going to be, you know, fighting gross monsters and...
Government-sponsored pharmacare for superhero vigilantes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. At the same time, they're I don't want them to be turned into cops. I don't want them having to take orders from a government, which might not always have its citizens' best interests at heart, frequently don't. So, you know, there's got to be some autonomy. I think it requires a very specific light touch.
All right, yay or nay?
Essentially nay.
Nay in the sense that it's usually done. In a better world, yay, yes. But yeah. I got to go with nay.
Yeah, okay. Fair. All right.
Go Cap.
I'll take the next one. Namor versus Aquaman. The two kings of the sea. It's shirts versus skins.
Well, it depends on which Aquaman.
It's shirts versus wings.
If it's 90s Aquaman, it's just like, there's no shirts allowed. True. If it's Jason Momoa, yeah, no shirts allowed.
But then it's like skins versus vodka. Smash.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like if it's like a swimming race, you know, if Aquaman's got a sweater or like a bunch of scales on, he's gonna be a little slower, I think. So
I think scales make you faster, and that's why fish have them.
Oh, is that it? Oh, okay. Well, you might be right.
I don't know.
as opposed to fish having skin?
Yeah.
Yeah, could you imagine if a fish had just like regular like human skin? Like a hairless cat, but a fish shape.
I just pulled a sphinx.
It's just a person face, like the sea man game.
You pull that out of the water. Hey, you caught me. Oh, Christ, put it back.
Hi.
I'm insisting that it doesn't talk.
Oh, they're going to talk. If they got skin, they're talking.
Oh, yeah, they got to talk.
I think Namor. Because as much as, you know, they've sort of boosted Aquaman over the years and, you know, try continually to be like, no, he's a legit dude, and I agree, he is, but Namor is he can be a villain, he can be a hero. Yeah. He's whatever.
I think he's much more nuanced.
And he's awesome at all of it.
He's got a better triangle head too. Just that. Whoop,
whoop. Yes.
Yeah, I would say so. I think he's also just like way more brutal. Like he'll do whatever it takes. I just don't think when it comes down to it, Aquaman has that edge, I don't think. Not that that's all it takes, mind you, but
Aquaman's got the whole, oh, I'm of two worlds and I don't belong in either, and Namor's just like, fuck you, Ocean rules. Go Team Ocean.
He's like, I am also from two worlds, but I really don't care about the other one.
But also Imperious Rex.
Yeah, exactly.
My uncle, Imperious Rex.
I love that Imperious Rex.
An underwater Tyrannosaurus Rex.
I don't think Namor is going to get a quirky-looking cartoon show, and Aquaman has him beat there.
And have a best friend who's an octopus, who's also kind of a butler, that sort of thing. Yeah,
Namor killed his octopus butler.
And he ate him. Yeah. All right, so Namor wins it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so. I have one now, and this might be, maybe this is less of a debate. I guess we're going to find out. Let's go through it. Jack Kirby at Marvel versus Jack Kirby at DC. And it may seem very slanted, obviously, just based on the sheer power of that Marvel output. It's very slanted. So of course, you got like, you know, Captain America, obviously, you got Fantastic Four, the original X-Men, Hulk, Thor. You got, you got so many.
What do you got at DC besides the New Gods?
Well, again, you got the Fourth World. That includes Mr. Miracle. That includes, obviously, like Darkseid, all of that, which is big. He did like OMAC, Kamandi, The Last Boy on Earth. He did, and I'll stick up for Jimmy Olsen. I'll stick up for his Jimmy Olsen every day. That rules. Jimmy Olsen is great. The Demon, Manhunter. He did a new version of Manhunter during that time. And then he did come back to Marvel after his stint at DC, which was really only like 4 years or so. And he, nothing quite as memorable, but I mean, he did like the Eternals, Celestials, Machine Man, Devil Dinosaur. So I looking at it,
I think,
you know what I mean? Just maybe,
I think it obviously,
however you want to like compare the two,
leans more towards Marvel just because that was the heyday. That was the moment where everything began. And he had such a much longer stint there as well. So he had more time to create all these things. And that's, it was the heyday of like, we're starting fresh and creating whatever we can. Whereas by the time he gets to DC, it's a much shorter stint. It's much more constrained. He's kind of given things to do. He's allowed to create certain things. And the Fourth World is amazing, but.
But also, once he went back to Marvel, he basically recreated a lot of that stuff just at Marvel. So
which also was kind of a bit lesser than the stuff at DC, really. It was
which was a bit lesser than the stuff at Marvel before that.
Yeah, fair. So on the whole, I mean, like, again, not really much of a debate, I guess, but you know, sometimes I just thought it'd be nice to sort of like literally compare the roster on both sides and kind of take a look. And you know, DC quite strong. There's a lot of material there. I mean, like, obviously, like Darkseid is just seems to be permanently like the big.
He's the big baddie, yeah.
The big bad of DC, line defining. But I mean, considering how many of those he created at Marvel by comparison,
Marvel wins.
All right, well, that was quick, but I enjoyed it.
Me too. Is the Punisher a hero or a villain? And you can't say he's an anti-hero. That's a freaking cop out. He's got to be a hero or a villain. Because yes, he does good things, but is it for the right reason? And the way he does those good things is by murders. So
I'm going to just say, go with my gut and say villain. Because I think that even though he's killing bad people, he's killing like criminals.
Oh, he's a villain because he's killing.
Chilling like a villain.
Killing like a villain.
Now, what about Krillin?
Oh.
What about Krillin?
I like Krillin. What about Krillin?
Fine. We wish back Krillin.
Like, a lot of villains think that they're the hero of their story, obviously. That's just how it works. But I feel like, again, like, how much of what he's doing is just perpetuating more of the same? He's killing, like, mobsters. He's killing, like, criminals, stuff like that. I mean, a lot of the times, I mean, obviously these, like, the mob and organized crime is obviously bad. Obviously, they're committing a lot of horrible crimes. But honestly, a lot of the time, unless somebody is antagonizing them, If you're an innocent person, they're not coming after you.
I don't know if that argument works, because then you could say every hero antagonizes. Batman just keeps capturing the Joker and pushing and punching him, and then...
Next time we do this, we'll answer that question. Do heroes create villains, sort of thing?
Well, there's always sort of... Even in superhero comics, there's always sort of a bit of a difference, I feel. Like, even with Batman, for example, you look at, like, sometimes he almost has kind of a... You know, he takes on, like, say, the Joker is just, like, gonna kill indiscriminately, or, like, gonna, like, make a big messy thing that's gonna lead to, like, a lot of people suffering and dying. But the mobsters, it almost feels like Batman sort of, he also opposes them, but there's this weird sort of state where, like, the mobsters, as long as they're not, like, attacking the public, he's a little more patient with them. He'll still take them down, obviously, but, I mean, sometimes he sort of operates within more legal means than he does, say, the ones who are outright just chaotic, tearing shit up in public where people are running for their lives. Where I feel like the Punisher is kind of a wrecking ball through a situation that might otherwise not become that, and he might sort of, like, make that situation worse.
I see what you mean, and I think it's a good point, but I think it's also, you're talking about the reasons they chose to do this, and this... He's being, like, not a Superman or Spider-Man or, like, that sort of level. Even Batman is a high... He's street level, but he's not street level. Like, he'll still take on Darkseid. You'll never see Punisher. Like, not that they haven't done it, but, like, shooting Thanos. Like, that's generally not what he does. And it's because his family...
From very far away, he hits him with his van. With his cool van.
He hits
van.
The Thanos helicopter with his Punisher van.
Yeah, perfect.
Wayne Knight's driving van, though. Wayne Knight.
I mean, but he's like...
I can't wait to draw that.
But he's... The whole reason behind him becoming the Punisher is that his family was killed by the mob.
Yes.
So it's... He's doing it for that reason. I'm not saying... I list him as a hero, but I don't think he's a good hero. He's certainly not a model hero sort of thing. He's not a Captain America sort of thing, but...
Like he said to the cops that one time.
Yeah, well, there you go. And again, I feel like reality, like, again, I make that comparison, but I feel like, you know, if Spider-Man or, like, Batman is dealing with the mob, it's always a little bit different. They always seem a little more honorable.
I think the Punisher knows what he is.
Like, the mob that Punisher is dealing with, they're going to be, like, human trafficking and killing indiscriminately, and he has to take on that level because the other ones don't live on that level. So, I mean, I see that side of it because... You know, I'm thinking of, like, a traditional comic book mafia where they just have, like, elaborate schemes that aren't quite as destructive. But, like, the more real-world one, it's like, yeah, they're probably doing human trafficking and other horrific things, and maybe they need a bullet.
So says Bri.
So what side are you on now? I think you started villain.
I've turned it around. I've turned it around a bit, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think Merc might have put me to hero a little bit, actually. And again, I don't agree with his methods.
No, but that's the thing. He's like...
But damn it, he gets results.
Though he should... The tearing up the cop thing, tearing up the thing with the cops and stuff, he's really got to be doing that every day. Every single day, I think. It's very important. Because that influence is quite villainous, I would say.
Okay, moving on.
Was Captain Marvel, like the Shazam Captain Marvel, a Superman ripoff? Because this goes back to the original creation of Superman, who was created in 1938. Shortly thereafter, 1939-40, Fawcett Comics comes out with Captain Marvel. Then, what were they called at the time? National Comics, DC, sued them for copyright infringement, saying, like, you're basically, you've ripped off our Superman character. That went, and this is the interesting thing. I always kind of knew that part, but I actually looked up some of the information on it. I never knew. It went for 7 years of litigation until it actually went to trial in 1948, and the trial went from 1948 to 51, and originally ended with Fawcett winning, saying this is not copyright infringement. Basically something about, like, National has dropped their copyright on it. They never kept it up. Then 1952, they made an appeal. They said Captain Marvel was an infringement and that there were specific stories and super abilities that were infringements.
I know. Disagree.
Well, this is the thing.
I disagree.
And then it's like, then Fawcett settled out of court and agreed to permanently cease publication of Captain Marvel and also pay National $400,000.
Which is a lot of money, regardless of when.
And it also had other things in play because it was Captain Marvel was like the number one seller during World War II, beating Superman, and then coming out of it with the decline of superheroes, there like it just kind of declined and started to peter out, and they I guess decided like this isn't worth fighting anymore because it's not really our big seller, so they decided to just settle out of court.
Yeah.
So for years, Captain Marvel just disappeared completely off the market until I guess DC got the rights for Captain Marvel and then reintroduced him into DC Universe. But this question still stands. Was Captain Marvel a Superman ripoff?
I don't think he was. I think what are the similar things? They both have dark hair, wear a bodybuilder suit, which is what every superhero wore, and had a cape. Other than that, completely different stories, completely different tones.
Well, flight, super strength.
But Captain Marvel, Shazam, was the first one to fly. Superman copied that from him. Superman could just jump really high.
Yeah. And Captain Marvel, I mean, again, it's right there in the premise. He is basically getting powers and abilities from gods, you know, from actual mythological figures, which I mean is the inspiration of superheroes, really. So I mean, if you're starting to say that, like, really at that point, I mean, like, the premise is different. He's a kid who turns into a man. His powers aren't exactly the same. There's some similar ones, obviously, but not completely the same. I mean, if Captain Marvel is a ripoff of Superman, how many other superheroes are a ripoff of Superman? Where did Superman come from?
Playing devil's advocate,
because you knew we were going to do this.
Like, and I completely agree that I think you're right. But then it's also, you got to think of it in the context of the time of like the 40s and early 50s, like how many characters there actually were, and especially at the start, because they're not going to be looking at later. That's not the argument.
Right, of course.
At the time of creation, where there's a handful of these characters.
Sure.
So it's like, oh, Superman, big muscle-bound guy. This is a new thing in the bodybuilder suit and a cape. And, oh, now there's another one that's like that kind of suit and a cape. Oh, and they jump superhero, like super strength. I can see somebody who does not read comics, has no connection. We are like invested into comics, obviously.
What? No.
No. But like, just think of it like some judge.
I'm here for the chicks.
Some judge in the 50s that's like, oh, Superman. Oh, he looks just like, you know, he's a big guy with dark hair. You could just easily link the two of like, oh, totally. Yeah, you just made it up and totally ripped the other one off. I think that's probably where it came from.
Well, like how many, think about at the time too, around that era, how many like kind of similar cartoon animals were out there? Like, you know, you have like a mischievous sort of anthropomorphized animal who's getting into some wacky misadventures. Could describe Mickey Mouse, could describe Bugs Bunny.
But I would be curious if there was any copyright infringements in that sort of thing too. Like,
both
we
have
always
gloves.
Hear about this one court case. I wonder if there were others that it was like, nope.
But they ultimately both exist separately now, and they're, you know, and frankly, they're that the initial premise that they're based on isn't necessarily originate with them. It still sort of was inspired by things before it. So I think that I don't know. I think the entire premise just doesn't hold water to me. I think that maybe there was an inspiration there, yes, but a ripoff, yep. Not really, because even if it was based on Superman initially, it changed enough to be, what's that word? Transformative. Anyway,
right. Well, I don't know if fair use was
we're using terms that didn't even exist then.
We are from the future. We have future laws.
Yes, future laws that apply. But no, I think that I
legal
don't,
weed
you know,
for
I don't
everyone.
We all agree then.
Yeah.
Yay! We're going to debate two methods of writing and creating comics. The Marvel method, which was famously, the writer would put together, the Stan Lee would put together like kind of a plot.
The writer would put together the Stan Lee?
put together the Stanley.
Yeah, you get your Stanley from IKEA, and
yeah,
it's spelled really
you
weird.
Make
but
sure
you
have a Kirby wrench, and yeah,
yeah. So the writer would do like a plot script, basically, which is, you know, kind of like a treatment, a whole summary of the plot, basically, you know, all the beats of where it goes. Give that to the artist. The artist would just draw it however they saw fit, just sort of interpret it that way, and then it would go back to the writer, who would then do all like the dialogue and captions based on it. So it was more, it's collaborative, more collaborative, I suppose, but also puts a lot more of the actual, you know, power to the artist. The artist is really kind of the director, basically, where, you know, the writer is more the editor. You know what I mean? Kind of that role. As opposed to the, like, the full script method or one that DC more used. It's not really the DC method per se, but back in the old days, it's really what they used, where the writers would have, like, a full script, give to the artist who would just do the script, and then that was it.
Right.
So a few things about that. I mean, there's a few things to consider as well, just from a production level, not necessarily, like, a creativity level. But, for example, like, the letterer, if you had a full script, the letterer and other people down the line can sort of work ahead a bit. You know, they can sort of prepare, especially in the old days when you had to, like, literally do, you know, you had to, like, letter stuff and you could, like, paste stuff on. So they could sort of get started as much as possible while they're waiting for the art.
I would disagree because you need the art before you can do the lettering because you need the right size, bubble shape.
Yeah, but I mean,
well, if there's already the pencils,
sometimes they do like the thumbnails, right? They might do the thumbnails and send those along while they're doing like the actual, you know what I mean? Like maybe they have like a rough thumbnail of like how the page is going to look. They do the final ones. They can send those along. Everyone can kind of like work more in concert.
I completely disagree, but okay.
Unless you disagree,
I don't think they did that ever.
All right. Okay. Others, it's you know, others they did yeah. as much as they could, not completely, but. With the Marvel method, like, you got no clue.
I was getting started on the colors.
It's the last thing getting done in that part of the process. Like, the art is completely done before the dialogue is done, and then you got to send that over to the letter, and the letter has got to crank it out right away. At least if they have, like, you know, they can do as much as they can ahead of time, even if it's not the full job, obviously. They can do a little work ahead of time. What do you think is the better method? And maybe we're biased.
I don't think there is a better method. I think they're just two different methods, and it depends on the writer and the artist. Like, for a Kirby and a Lee, it worked for them, and they created great stories from that. But if it was an Alan Moore and whoever, like, that ain't gonna work.
Yeah, I mean, different writers offer a different amount. Like, there's some writers where you see the scripts that they put out, and they're doing thumbnails, they're doing layouts, and they're describing, like you said, Alan Moore, like, really, really specific details. And you might not get that with a different writer.
There's not really much of a debate here. It's just like, it's a nuanced discussion, and they both
have
their pros and cons.
There is no one or the other.
It's important for the artist and the writer to work together.
Yeah.
Whatever way that works for them, for that team.
I would say that might be a slight argument. Not every case is different, obviously, but I mean, sometimes I think the full script method, it might, the artist can maybe be thought of as more of an afterthought.
Yeah,
so,
but it's, but even,
but
yeah, but then you get yourselves an image.
Even with the full script, it's the idea of the screenplay writer versus a director. I think that that comes into play every time there is an artist and a writer anyways, because
that's true.
They can describe certain things and they can change it completely within those, even if it is very, very descriptive.
And then, again, you're right. There's levels too. Like even like a full script method. Sometimes there's a full script, but it's not like, you know, sometimes you would see scripts that are the writer has just like meticulously like they've given you no wiggle room. And sometimes it's like literally
Superman jumps and you see him flying past a building. Like that's all you got. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all the dialogue is already there, but like it gives you a looseness to sort of play around with it. So I feel like, yeah, maybe that's the better method. Maybe right in the middle. What a cop-out.
Perfect. All right, well, I think that just about does it for this week. Let's talk about who we are in a segment that I like to call, Who Are We?
Who are we? I'll go first. I'm Merc. My name is Merc. You can find me at mercasylum.ca, MERKASYLUM.ca. Merc on Facebook, Mercanaut like astronaut on the Instagrams. That's about it.
I am Bri Kotick. You can check out my comic, Welcome to Hereafter, at welcometohereafter.com. I'm also on Instagram at BryKotoyk.
And my name is Kyle Lees. You can check my stuff out at thekylelees.com or thekylelees on Instagram or thekylelees shop on Instagram.
And you can see all of us, you can check all of us out if you're in Thunder Bay at the Thunder Bay Country Market at the recently revamped, rebranded, redesigned Weird Works Studio booth on the second floor.
Woo!
So that is, you can go on Saturdays between 8 a.m. and 1 p.m. and Wednesdays 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. We're also joined by Ryan Mackett, an extremely talented friend of ours.
Yep.
So we're a mighty team of four selling our art and wares, and we'd love it if you come check it out. And maybe buy some.
Sure, yeah.
Ocean City Defender, thank you. Thank you, buddy, for sweet, sweet tunes. We thank you every episode. This time it's a little shorter than usual. I'm sorry.
And thank you for listening. And we'll talk at you next time. Have fun.
Bye.
Hey, have a great day.
Ba-ba-ba-da-ba-da.